You're listening to Sound Effect on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Jennifer Wing, and today we are on island time. All of the stories for this show have some connection to an island. If you go to the bottom of Vashon Island, there's a spit of land that's sort of in the shape of a bent arm. It used to be separate from Vashon. It used to be its own island, Maury Island. Along the shores of Maury Island, on June 21st, 1947, something incredibly violent happened to a man named Harold Dahl, his son Charles, their dog, and two dock workers. They were out on Dahl's boat, searching for stray logs to resell to the local sawmills, when six round objects appeared in the sky.
At first, you know, they were just hovering. One was lower than the others, much lower than the others.
This is Steve Edmiston. He and his filmmaking partner Scott Schaefer made a movie about this day and the events that followed called The Maury Island Incident. And again, these are flying saucers in the sky that allegedly appeared on June 21st, 1947 at 2 in the afternoon.
And that lower flying disc eventually started dropping what they described as chaff. Kind of, if you've seen paper burn in a fireplace. I don't think they ever described it as dangerous, but the next thing that happened was
this flying saucer that this ash was dropping from, it had an explosion, and molten metal started falling from the sky.
When this fiery slag, and that seems to be the word that gets used historically, was coming down, the son, Charles, his arm was severely burned, according to their allegations. The dog was killed by the slag falling from the sky. So they're so frightened that they take this 50-foot boat and they run it up on the beach so that they can get off the boat and hide in the cliffs that are on the beach there on Maury Island. And then these objects leave. They get the boat back in the water, they get on the boat, and as they go back to Tacoma, they kind of decide that they won't talk about this. They don't know what to say about what they've seen. What happens next is maybe the even more extraordinary part of the story. On June 22nd, the next day.
The very next day,
at Harold Dahl's house, a man shows up, knocks on the door at 6:30 in the morning, and he is dressed in black. You know, he's that black suit, the jacket and the pants and the white shirt and the black tie and the black shoes and everything that we would now in our modern world associate with the Men in Black. This man's at the door and he wants to talk to Harold Dahl about what Harold saw yesterday, the day before, on the water. He doesn't want to talk about it there. He wants to go to a diner and talk about it. And at the diner, the man proceeds to point by point recount what Harold saw the day before on the water and concludes that recitation with a warning that Harold probably shouldn't be talking about what he saw.
Did this man in black, did he ever identify himself as being from a government agency?
I didn't come across any account, you know, as we went through lots of documentation that was generated, you know, in the investigations that followed, that he made a specific identification of who he was with.
How does the meeting end?
If there was, in fact, a meeting and a warning that you shouldn't talk about it, Harold didn't follow that advice. You know, Harold did talk to friends and family. The word of what he saw did get out. And then, according to Harold Dahl, many, many bad things happen, just like the man in black said they would. Bad things will happen if you talk. Bad things did allegedly happen to Harold Dahl.
What happened?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things, and Scott can help me fill in.
I'm Scott Schaefer. I'm a filmmaker and a journalist. You know, bad things did happen to Harold Dahl. His wife attacked him with a knife at one time.
That story has been corroborated, and we think that it was had become so upsetting that Harold Dahl was telling a story that was subjecting the family to ridicule. We speculate that his wife became so upset, she literally attacked him. Harold, his boat was damaged and vandalized. His business was vandalized. His son, Charles, literally disappeared, like he was gone. Like, did he run away? Was he abducted? They didn't know. 2 weeks later, he was found in Lusk, Montana.
The son was found in Lusk, Montana.
In Lusk, Montana.
At a
restaurant with no recall of how or why he was there.
And again, to remind our listeners, this is the summer of 1947, and the sighting was one of hundreds, if not thousands, of reported UFO sightings. This was the summer when people reported seeing a UFO crash near Roswell, New Mexico. Did the U.S. government take all of these claims seriously?
Yes. What happened was, in the summer of 1947, you have to think about what was going on in the country, in the world at that time. We were just a few years out of World War II, and we had already been told or discovered that we had a brand new enemy, the Soviet Union. So what was happening was the dawn of the Cold War was upon us. So in the summer of 1947, when people like Harold Dahl started saying they saw objects in the sky, all branches of our government, FBI, the Army, the newly formed CIA, were all actively investigating sightings. And the reason isn't because the government thought little green men were here. It's because, well, what if the Soviet Union is overflying our country?
Yeah, maybe they have new kind of airplanes.
They were really concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were chasing these leads down.
Not too long after Harold Dahl's sighting, two officers from the U.S. Air Force take the lead on investigating what happened to Harold. They interview him. They take some of the slag, the metal stuff that fell from the sky, and label it top secret. Then the men get on a plane headed to California. The plane catches on fire and crashes in the forest east of Kelso, Washington, and both investigators die. Someone from the government swoops into the crash site to collect the top secret evidence, and it's at this point the FBI takes over the investigation.
And the lead agent at the FBI was a man named Jack Wilcox.
Okay.
And so we have all of his memos that were being generated daily, you know, documenting the results of the investigation, that went directly to J. Edgar Hoover, who, as it turns out, had some weird habits. One of them was also a fascination with this kind of stuff.
With UFOs.
Yes.
Yes. So does Harold Dahl, does he have to go through a whole new interrogation? I'm guessing these FBI agents want to talk to him.
Absolutely. They even get a confession from Harold Dahl that is characterized as a confession that it's a hoax, that they made it all up. So when you read the documents early in the investigation, the August 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, that sort of early first few days, there's a lot of assumption in these documents that we think this is a hoax, that they've made it up, and we're going to close this case by proving that it's a hoax. And Harold Dahl is playing into that. He's telling everybody he can talk to, even the media, I made it all up. I'm the biggest, this is a quote, I am the biggest liar that ever lived. When they actually talk to Dahl, Dahl is crystal clear. I saw what I saw, and I'm not recanting that.
What about the confession?
Yes, but I am forever going to tell the world that I made it up.
Why?
Because the bad things that had happened to him were so bad, he would rather be accused of being a hoaxer than be accused of a crazy person that actually saw something.
What do you want someone who's stumbling onto this for the first time, what do you want them to get out of this tale?
If this is true, if this deep dive reveals a truth about this event, and all I had to do was, you know, figure out where the documents were and read them, and there's a truth that is completely divergent from, what's the phrase I'm looking for?
The public face of the story. Back in 1947.
That excites me, as if I'm a historian or just a storyteller, because it just sort of empowers me to say, wow, you know, I don't need to trust the public face of a story. that is historical, that is interesting to me, I may want to go deeper, and it's that's like treasure hunting to me.
Well, Scott Schaefer, Steve Edmiston, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.